2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Cape Cod Pod. It's your host, Jeff Ponce. I'm here as always with my co-host, Peter Flaherty of our college team. You're back on Cape now, Peter, after a little bit less than 2 weeks out there in Omaha. How was Omaha? How are these games? You got some good ones.
Oh, man, it lived up to every bit of the hype. I was so fired up going into it. Came away even more fired up. It was both an outstanding field in terms of how talented the teams were, and then also draft talent at the individual level. And then the cherry on top was how crisp and professionally these games were played. So it was an awesome experience that culminated in LSU winning its first national championship since 2009. So I joked with Teddy a little bit on our podcast earlier that it might be all downhill for me from here in terms of the College World Series, but there are sure to be eight more really good teams next year. And I like that while the college season did come to an end, sadly, a few days ago, kind of keeps going here through the middle of August with the Cape League, which I think is another reason why the Cape League is so great, because if you're a college baseball fan, you might not have that connection you do to a team that you root for, but you have, you know, the odds are that the team that you like, you have a lot of guys out here and you can keep tabs on them and kind of maybe pull for a team that they're on. So I think that it'll be another fun, you know, month and a half of college baseball.
No, there'll be other super teams in this NIL era. I'm sure Jay Johnson is out there beating the bushes right now and bringing in another, like, you know, posse of seven or eight superstars to backfill. And, you know, we need a new tandem with Tommy Tanks for next year now that, you know, he's matriculating to pro ball. So, yeah, really interesting stuff. You know, I obviously watched it out there, but here's the important question. Did you do any scouting for the show? Like, do we have any players that you watched out in Omaha who are going to be making their way out here to the Cape?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a handful on LSU. I think most notably, Gavin Guidry is going to be playing for Falmouth. And interestingly enough, with Guidry, instead of getting most of his work in on the mound, which is what he did this year for LSU, he is underratedly a two-way player. So he's going to be getting a lot of reps on the dirt, whether it be at second base or shortstop. And I think that he's going to be a factor for LSU next year on both sides of the baseball. And then after that, it's kind of TBD on who comes up. With USA, making it to Omaha is a slog. And, you know, oftentimes I have my opinion on it. We don't need to get into it, but guys will kind of shut it down after getting the College World Series, winning a national title, whatever it might be. So a little bit TBD on who's coming. I know Guidry's coming. I also know Josh Pearson, who made that heroic season-saving catch in the bottom of the 10th inning of Game 1. He'll be with Brewster. Jared Jones, the towering freshman with 70-grade raw power, will also be with Brewster. Griffin Herring is on Chatham's roster. I don't know both that he's a true freshman, how many innings he threw, if he will be there, still TBD on that. And then kind of bouncing around a little bit to the other teams, on UVA, star freshman Jack O'Connor. I was really pleased to find out yesterday that he will be throwing on the Cape, even after all that he threw at UVA. I was psyched to find out that he will be pitching this summer for Hyannis. I think that he's going to come maybe the first week and a half of July, but regardless, he'll be here, and he's a supreme arm talent, fastball in the mid-90s, really good breaking ball, projects to be UVA's kind of guy in the rotation next year. So he'll be really exciting to watch for Hyannis. Same with Bradley Hodges, freshman southpaw, had a really good year for the Cavs, contributed out in Omaha. He'll also be with Hyannis. Colin McKay will be on Katuit. Ethan Anderson is on Harwich's roster. There are so many variables with USA and all that. So I'm kind of just going over the sure bets, and I'm sure I missed some guys. There are a couple of Tennessee players that are already on Katuit, others that will be joining other teams, and Stanford, again, they'll send guys all across the league, whether it be to YD, Katuit, Hyannis, Falmouth. Everyone's got a Cardinal, it seems. So It'll be another fun influx of a really, really good group of players all around. So while there might be a little bit of a drop off now with the draft and the combine and USA with guys leaving, there are going to be some dudes coming in all across the league. So it's going to be a fun time here as we get rolling into July.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, collegiate national team tryouts have ended. So it'll be some of those guys kind of matriculating, making their way back to the Cape. And you know, the USA team USA ends what, the 10th of July. So there's still a chance, I would imagine, not pitchers, but some of these hitters might make their way back to some teams for the stretch run there heading into the All-Star break. And then, you know, the playoffs at the, you know, the end of the month, or excuse me, the beginning of August and July there, really interesting stuff. As far as how the standings are shaking out as of today, got a two-way battle right now. Guess they're a point back in the East Division. Whitey Red Sox are 10-6-1. Harbich is 10-6. So, you know, a game in hand for YD, and it's a tie. So certainly a good chance that Harbich could overtake them some point this week. Orleans won a few games. I think they lost a couple this week as well. They're 5-5 of the last 10, but they're 7-9. And they're certainly ahead of Brewster and Chatham at this point. Chatham has been struggling. I know there's been some frustration that was voiced by Coach Holiday there as well. Some guys that, you know, bigger name players haven't necessarily performed at the level they had anticipated, but that could certainly turn around real quick. You know, a hot week or two can do a lot in these standings in a short season. So all is not lost there. And I don't think either of us would count out, you know, Jamie Shevchek and the Brewster Whitecaps with the type of performances they put up over the last couple of seasons. And tweeted it out earlier, Jamie has the best shoe game of any coach I think I've ever seen in my life. Those were unbelievable Jordan 1 lows. And you can't really see it in the picture, but they're a little shiny. It's like a patent leather setup. So good looking stuff there. Out in the West Division, the Kootenai Cavaliers are in a fairly, they're in the driver's seat. They're 12-5, 24 points. Next closest teams to them are Wareham, Bourne, Hyannis, all sort of bunched up. Wareham's 8-7-2, 18 points there. Bourne's 8-8-1, 17 points. Hyannis, same deal, 8-7-1 with 17 points. But we know well that division is still very much up for grabs. We could see a lot happen here. And credit to the new coaching staff in Wareham. You know, they're playing much better than they've performed over the last 2 years, where they were kind of in a bit of a rut after being a pretty strong team back in like 18 and 19, if I recall. So that's good to see too. Any sort of thoughts here on any of these teams? I've seen everybody now with the exception of Harwich and YD. So I haven't seen the class of the East Division as of yet. I don't know if you have.
I'm still playing catch up a little bit with my 2 week stint out in Omaha. So I'm still kind of getting a feel for some of these teams, especially with the departures. But out in the East, I think, you know, as you mentioned, it's YD and Harwich kind of jostling up there at the top. I think that YD is a really good team. Same with Harwich. I know Harwich got bit a little bit by USA, so it's going to be interesting to see how they manage. But I think that YD is a really, really strong club that may have lucked out a little bit with USA. Hunter Hines, obviously, didn't get invited. I think that Mitch Voit might be coming back. Same with first base slugger Anthony Martinez, who, again, similar to Hines, that profile is going to play really well at Red Wilson Field, that hulking left-handed hitter with borderline double plus raw power. I think that, you know, that's going to play really well there. And on the pitching side of things, one guy that's really stepped up for him is Hector Garcia from Hope International. 1.3 ERA, 20 Ks to just one walk. In, I think, 13 innings pitched. He's been really good. And I know as we kind of go down the standings, Harwich is right there. With Harwich, they've played one less game. And so when they make up that rain out, they might just get into first place by default once they get to the same amount of games played with a win. So that's going to be a coin flip for, I think, as long as we keep trudging along here. Orleans and Brewster are kind of battling for that 3 and 4 spot as we speak. And then Chatham bringing up the rear. I hope that they can get things straightened out and get some continuity on their roster. I know that's a lot easier said than done at this time. Coach Holiday touched upon it at this, at this juncture, when you're trying to bring in new guys, it is a really difficult task, because if a pitcher isn't throwing, he's probably completely ramped down and potentially shut down for the summer, and you can't ramp him back up again. And if a pitcher is throwing, it's probably in another summer league, and you can't pull, you know, in the Cape League, you can't pull from other summer leagues with very rare exception. It's not like you can just pluck guys willy nilly. So, I am hoping for Coach Holiday's sake. It's more fun in the league when Chatham's competitive, and it's more fun, especially when a Coach Holiday led team is competitive, because I think, I really respect what he does, and I think that he's a great coach. And I think in today's game, some of what he says and the wisdom that he drops, is very, very valuable. So again, we're still very early. You mentioned it, a good week for one team and a bad week for the other could completely flip the division or the landscape of the standings on its head, which is what I think makes it so fun. And then heading out west again, Coutu to the top, 24 points. And then Wareham is trailing them with 18. But again, Coutu and Wareham play each other tonight with a Wareham win that's now just a 2-game lead at the top. So it's just every game matters a lot. Each result is magnified with, you know, with the point system and how few games there are. So I think one team to watch out there is Bourne. They got off to a slow start, but they have since been on an absolute tear. They have that Coastal Carolina duo of Caden Bodine and Derek Bender. Derek Bender has been a world beater since coming up here. In his 10 games, he's 18 for 38, which is an average of 474, with 3 doubles, 3 home runs, a triple, and 10 RBIs. And I haven't seen it firsthand. I am really looking forward to seeing it firsthand. Same with Bodine, who's also been outstanding. So that is a club to watch. Coach Landers is part of the Coach Shevchik coaching tree, which has seemed to have taken over the Cape League at this point. I don't know if they have the shoe game that Coach Shevchik does. Coach Smythe at Wareham does have some pretty sweet turfs, but I think Coach Shevchik might have them beat forever in the shoe game department. But again, Coach Landers is a guy that brings in guys that are gritty players. They want to win. They want to be here. I'm kind of echoing exactly what Coach Holiday said, but he's done a really good job in Bourne. And then Hyannis again. I saw them for the first time this season last night. Tough result, but again, it's, you know, baseball is so weird. You saw that I was able to see firsthand the talent that they have on their roster. Cam Smith, freshman from Florida State, is really seeing the ball well as of late. Again, it's 250, which in this league is really impressive, especially as a true freshman with 4 doubles, a pair of home runs. And I think that the swing and miss issues that plagued him at Florida State, they're still present, but he is seeing spin a lot better. He looks way more comfortable in the batter's box, way more in control. And I think that his production down the stretch is going to be key for the Harbor Hawks. And Mike Sirota, I mean, at this point, he's Mike Sirota. He's one of the most dynamic players in all of college baseball. I think it's 5-tool upside with him. He's twitchy as all get out. Really explosive hands at the plate, outstanding professional-like approach. He had an outfield assist last night where he showed off his arm from right field, had a nice one-hop throw on a line to nab a Coutu runner at the plate. And then on the pitching side of things, they're going to get a big boost with Jack O'Connor here soon. With the draft and guys coming in and out, you know, it's always tough to have continuity, but they have, you know, they have reinforcements on the way, as do a lot of these teams. So although the landscape's ever-changing, you know, I think in the West, you know, obviously Gatuit in front and then Falmouth kind of down there at the bottom with 12. I haven't seen them yet. Interested to see them. They always historically they have the biggest names. I think they catch the biggest fish to sign on their roster. And unfortunately, they haven't always shown up like physically. They haven't shown up with USA and going deep into the College World Series. So a little surprising to see them off to a slow start, but again, we're so early on, they very well could rip off, you know, a few more wins in a row, be sitting right at 500 and in the hunt. So that's what makes the Cape League so fun. There's talent everywhere you look, whether you're in first place or you're bringing up the rear at this point. You've got some really talented guys on your roster that you're going to feel excited about that can potentially bring your organization a championship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree on Cam Smith. My second look at Cam Smith looked much better. Hoping to get another look on them. I saw Falmouth early, which was frankly a a very different team from the one that's there right now. You know, some pre-draft guys that were there, you know, as well as Charlie Condon, who I believe is, did he make the national team, Condon?
Oh, I'll have to check. I think he did, though. He did. Okay. He did.
All right. Yeah. We'd have to double check on that. I figured that he would, but, you know, wasn't 100% sure. So wanted to see that there. But, you know, I think there's a chance that I'm going to head back down the Cape tomorrow. I'm back on Pro Ball yesterday and then today. They're in Wareham tomorrow night. I might end up shooting over to Wareham to take a look at them and get me some Travis Benzana looks now that Benzana is here. It hasn't hit much as of yet, but I wouldn't panic. It's, you know, he's got a really low batting average on balls in play, and he's a guy that can hit. I think I'll turn it around quick. You know, just 30 at bats or something, right? Like, or 20 at bats. So, guy has a 4-for-4 showing tonight, or, you know, has big hits tomorrow. All of a sudden that stat line looks very, very different. But yeah, from a prospect perspective, I always find Falmouth to be one of the more interesting teams, to follow and check out. Cause they usually have at least a couple of dudes. So, you know, maybe 3 or 4 guys that will go in the top 5 rounds next year without much of a question there. So, absolutely.
Summer's here, and like probably a lot of you guys, we have a garden. And I love that ability to grow a tomato and basically pluck it from the vine and be eating it 20 minutes later. But our garden is very sporadic, and you probably have the same situation where you don't always have exactly what you want at the time you want it. Well, summer's here, and it's also a perfect time for HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. This summer, HelloFresh is here to take the work out of eating well. Reach your goals with delicious, calorie-smart, and protein-smart lunch and dinner options, plus new vegan recipes, too. You get farm-to-table quality with every HelloFresh box. HelloFresh's seasonal ingredients are picked at peak ripeness and travel from the farm to your doorstep in less than 7 days for fresh flavor in every bite, even when your garden doesn't provide it. I know that when I've cooked with HelloFresh, it is so easy that even I can do it. And trust me, if I can do it, I promise you, you can. HelloFresh gives the directions, gives you the exact ingredients, gives you the exact proportions to make a very, very good meal. Fresh, quick, and easy. Go to HelloFresh.com/16BA2023. That's 16BA2023 for 16 free meals plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/16BA, B as in boy, A as in alpha, 2023. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit.
I wanted to ask you this question, though, because I've gotten to a bunch of Cape games while you were gone. I think I've been to, what, 5 or 6 now. Got to see some decent pitching over the last, you know, week or so. Who's the best pitcher that you've seen in the Cape so far? And I know that I'm asking you that with about 5 games, but I think we're probably about equal.
Yeah. So the Cape League now looks so different than when I last was here. And now I think people listening are like, all right, we get it. Like, you went to Omaha. That's sick. it does look drastically different. So it's hard to judge. I caught a little bit of Josh Timmerman, who I know he's been a world beater for the Whitecaps. Now I only caught him for less than an inning, but he was really good. For those unfamiliar, had a little bit of a struggle, a little bit at Ohio State. Since coming up to the Cape, though, has almost literally been unhittable in 4 appearances, including 2 starts, which up here, when we talk about starts, a lot of the times it's 3, 4, at most 5 innings for these guys. So it's not like they're logging serious innings, but in 4 appearances, 11 2/3 innings, 15 Ks to 4 walks, 0 ERA, and just 1 hit allowed. He's been excellent for Brewster, and I'd like to actually see him for an extended period of time to get a full feel, because in his last start against Chatham, he went 6 shutout, 7 Ks, and allowed his first hit of the summer.
And I got some video up on Twitter of that start. I was out in Brewster last Sunday for that performance, and it's not bad. Not a ton of power, but he was like 1-3. I've heard that he's been more like 2-4. Pretty decent fastball shape there. Kind of average ride. It's a lower release. Mixed a cutter that was really effective in on the hands of left-handers, and a sweepy low 80 slider with, good spin rates, 2,600, 2,700 RPMs with decent, horizontal numbers, et cetera. So he was a really interesting arm, and he's pitched incredibly well thus far this year. He actually hadn't given up a hit until I think the 4th or 5th inning of that start on Sunday. So it isn't just runs. Balls aren't even dropping. I mean, there weren't many balls that even left, the infield in terms of the contact that was made. So he's dominated. I don't know if he's shutting it down pre-draft, because he is eligible this year. But if not, he could potentially go on Saturday or Sunday if they keep him on the same schedule. They don't have the listed starters yet for Brewster. So I'm uncertain. But if you're in the area and Timmerman is starting, I think it's worth checking him out, because like I said, it's not going to blow your socks off with stuff, but just the pitchability, the execution, repeatability and the mechanics, he's been pretty good. So showing well. I would be kind of shocked after the showing if he doesn't get drafted somewhere. And if, he does and maybe doesn't sign, that maybe wouldn't be a shock. So who knows, but we'll see how that plays out. Guy that I saw this week, actually the following day on Monday, and he pitched tremendous on Monday. And that was Cameron. It's Cameron, right? Not Cameron. It's Cameron.
I think it's Cameron.
It's still Cameron, huh?
I think so.
I was hoping it was like, kind of harkening back to the Cameron and, that whole crew back in the early 2000s when I was in college, and the Diplomats were popping off. But it's not. It's Cameron. All right. So Cameron Hill was awesome. Big left-hander. I mean, he looks like a power forward. Lean, tall. He's like 6'6", 6'7", left-handed. Low 90s fastball, but he was riding it pretty well. I think it's like, 17.9, 17.8 was what he was getting reads off of the TrackMan. And that actually wasn't out of line, because some Cape TrackMans can be a little wacky at times with the induced vertical break numbers. It was pretty in line with what his numbers were this season at college. Didn't have a great season with Georgia Tech at all. The numbers don't bear it out. Great slider. Was mixing up, a variety of pitches. He pitched 4 perfect innings, allowed, no hits, no walks, 4 Ks, was really untouchable. I kind of joked around with our good buddy Will, the Katuit. Is his position still the scout liaison?
I believe so.
I wasn't sure. He's moving up in the world. He's been there for 3 summers. So,
oh yeah.
What I'm saying to Will is, like, just keep this guy in, man. Come on, let him throw 100 pitches. He's not stretched out that far, but he's another guy that has not allowed a run thus far. In the Cape season, he's had 5 appearances now, spanning 12 2/3 innings. He's only allowed 3 hits, 2 walks. So over those 12 2/3, he's only had 5 base runners. He struck out 19 over that 12 2/3 innings. He looks great. To me, this looks like a guy that could potentially bust out this summer if he keeps this performance up. I don't expect him to go scoreless the entire summer, but a few more strong performances like this, I think he's definitely somebody that's going to be moving up boards for 2024. I know you've been around, Cameron a little bit, but seems like a really good kid and good stuff. And I think there's some more projection there when you look at that body and the fact that this looks like a guy that could potentially throw 4-6 within a couple of years, especially with some pro instruction.
Yeah. And, I've seen him throw at this point. I think I saw him throw once against Chatham. He looked really good. It was 3 shutout with 4 Ks. And I think that anytime you're talking about a pitcher and coming up to the Cape, kind of projecting what they might do, ERA in my mind is a pretty bad stat anyways. That's a topic for another time. But especially collegiately nowadays against metal bats, you know, you talk about the baseball and how tight it is, and some guys liken it to hitting a golf ball with how much it flies. And then now with metal bats and talking about how some might be hot. So he's a guy that at Georgia Tech, the ERA was pretty unimpressive, but the stuff, I mean, clearly it plays excellently against wood, which is what he's going to be facing, obviously, professionally. And, you know, you're talking about a 6'6", 215 or so pound left-handed pitcher. That's athletic, pretty good clay there. You know, I think that's a really, really appealing profile for teams. And if he can kind of keep showing that at the next level, he might be a starter this summer with extended appearances, continuing to throw the ball well. I thought, again, the slider in my look at him was really good. The fastball was up to a 5 when I got him. And then the changeup is a pitch that he's continuing to develop and get feel for. So if he can come out of the summer with really good performance numbers wise, and then also from in the scouting world, if they view this guy as a starter, now you're talking about a 6'6" left-handed starting pitcher who's probably going to be at Georgia Tech next year, I would hope, a Friday or Saturday guy. You know, and if he performs well in the ACC, now we're really getting serious with the draft and stuff. So he's no doubt a name to watch. I think that he's already gained some serious helium in the scouting world, and it'll be a fun summer to continue to watch him pitch.
So I want to talk to you about somebody that I interviewed a couple weeks back. He's a friend of one of my other podcasts. I know I got like 7 right now, but the 90th percentile, the one, you know, that I do with Matt Pajak, where we talk about player development. We had Nick McLean on actually, right at the end of his season. He was going into that UCLA. It was actually going into the USC series, excuse me. The end of their series, the Arizona State end of their season with USC and then UCLA, if I remember correctly. Hit pretty well, you know, has dealt with some injuries, was obviously a guy that hit the transfer portal and left UCLA and went to Arizona State, playing both sides of his two brothers in Matt and Sean. Interested. I know you're going to see him for the first time this evening, aren't you? I actually missed him. The one game he didn't play for Wareham was the game that I saw Wareham.
Yeah. So literally, like, when we finish recording, I will go up to the yard and see him take BP. So I'm really excited to see him play for the first time. And as you mentioned, had some injury trouble at UCLA, entered the portal, kind of followed in his brother Sean's footsteps at Arizona State. And he was really good for the Sun Devils when healthy. Hit really well, especially from the left side. I really like his hand action. It's a very explosive level swing, I think. You know, he's driven the ball to all fields, especially at Arizona State. And then up here, he's continued his good performance. Good performance is putting it lightly. Great performance, hitting around 370 with a double, 3 home runs and 12 RBIs, which in this league, I mean, that more than plays. He's been outstanding. He's recorded a hit in all but one of his 11 games. And I think tonight he's going to put on a show. He's also looked really good in the outfield. He's had a couple of outfield assists from right field. Good throwing arm. And then it's so far he's demonstrated a really good feel to hit, feel for the barrel. And it tracks with the McLean track record. And so I think that tonight, there's no reason to think that he's not going to continue his strong performance both tonight and then as we get through the summer. So, I think again, you talk about, I guess, Hill on the mound as being a guy that we go into 2024 really excited about, collegiately and then the draft. I think that Nick McLean has that type of upside and has potentially already established himself as one of those guys from a position player standpoint. And I think that in the draft right now, I know he's a little undersized, but again, feel the hit, some thump in the stick, and then a guy that's going to stick in a corner outfield position. Maybe even he's going to get some reps in center field this summer. He's a good athlete, can run a little bit. I think that's top 100 overall upside with McLean. So Needless to say, I'm very excited to see him play.
Yeah, and I know this is kind of hyperbolic after we've seen Matt get drafted in the first round twice, make it up to the big leagues, and has really hit. I think somebody had brought up last night that he's outperformed Anthony Volpe to this point, that he actually has, I believe, more hits than Volpe in a lot less games. Is there a chance that Nick might actually be the best of the McLean brothers? Because he seems like he has more actualized pop right now than Matt did when, you know, he was in the Cape with Wareham as well.
Ooh, that's an interesting hypothetical. The upside is certainly there. I'm not going to doubt it from an upside perspective, but Matt's been excellent since being called up to the Reds in 40 games. I mean, he's hitting around, 320 with 12 doubles and 6 home runs. I mean, he's looking like an impact, like a big impact big league player, which very few players can say. I'm not ready to stick the Nick is definitely going to be better than Matt label on him right now, but just talking about it from a sheer ceiling perspective and an upside perspective, I mean, it's certainly there where we are sitting here. And if this podcast exists in 4 or 5, 6 seasons, where Nick McLean is an impact big leaguer, there's certainly a world where that possibility exists. So he certainly couldn't ask for a better start. 370 in the Cape, a quarter of the way through the season, is no slouch. Again, we're under 50 at bat, so a couple offers like tank the average, but conversely, a couple more 2-3 hit performances and we're getting really serious about Nick McLean potentially winning MVP of this league.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'll actually get a look at him tomorrow. You'll get a look at him tonight. So we'll round back up, but he did make the hot sheet last week. He was number 4 on the hot sheet. With an 8-for-22 performance, 3 runs, 2 home runs, 6 RBIs, 4 strikeouts, the 3 walks, and a stolen base. So that's not too bad. Want to bid farewell to an early pre-draft performer here on Kituit. That's Brett Bateman. I believe he made our first 2 hot sheets, if I'm not mistaken. Center fielder from Minnesota. We've talked about the defensive skills there, the bat-to-ball skills for sure. He can run. And I think if you look at the body, I kind of wonder if there's a little bit more projection for power as he matures. But somebody that I think will go in the top 5 rounds. Am I talking out of turn there?
I mean, top 5, it might be top 5 might be a little heavy, but I certainly have him in that 6 to 8 round range. As you said, bat to ball skills off the charts. He hit 500 in his time here, and that's through 13 games with 46 at bats. His 13 RBIs, it's Hunter Hines has actually blown him out of the water at this point, but his 13 RBIs were tops in the league for a little while. Even after he'd left, he does not swing and miss. The swing decisions are outstanding, both from a bat to ball perspective. And then also an approach standpoint, sees the ball extremely well out of the pitcher's hand. It's a line drive oriented swing. Uses all fields, and then in center field, he is a really, really crisp and strong defender. Off the bat, reads have been outstanding. Routes are very efficient. The arm, I think, is average, maybe a tick below, so maybe he ends up in left, but he's absolutely an above-average defender. And I think that for as good of a season as he had at Minnesota, which was a really strong season, I think he had around 360. Made a name for himself there. He kind of blew up down here, where I think he is now absolutely a day 2 selection and with that top 6, 7 or so round upside. So happy trails to Brett Bateman.
Yeah, absolutely. Bateman is definitely one of those guys where stuck out pre-draft, you know, and when you hit like that on the Cape, you show you have some defensive skills. Wouldn't shock me if you find some success in pro ball. So he's been a pretty good one. But like I said, I wanted to bid farewell to him because he's now left Kituit pre-draft with the expectation of getting drafted. Wanted to bring up a Harwich Mariner here. We had one that was up top in Seaver King. We talked about Seaver King last week. Seaver King ended up going down the collegiate national team and made the team. So we will not be seeing Seaver King again this summer. Or maybe he comes back afterward. I don't know. We'd have to talk to Coach Steve over in Harwich and see if that's the case or not. But one that you had brought up and suggested for the hot sheet that I think you actually wrote up, or maybe it was actually me that wrote up, I can't remember, is Hunter Fitzgerald. Had a big week last week, was 8 for 23. No home runs, despite really good power and underlying exit velocity data from the college season. He was an Old Dominion guy. 5 runs, 6 RBIs, 6 strikeouts, 3 walks, but it's those 8 hits and the ability to get on base. He's kind of an interesting player. Well-rounded offensive skill set. He's a first base only type, but I don't know if you got an opportunity to see Hunter Fitzgerald or if you checked him out during the season and kind of what your read is there.
I missed him in his time on the Cape, but during the season, I've been following him in Old Dominion. That's obviously a fun team to follow in the Sun Belt year in and year out. But performed well for the Monarchs, came up here and really tore it up before the draft, hit right at about 350, I think, with 4 doubles, 6 RBIs, respectable K to walk ratio. And he's he more than looks the part. He's 6'4", 220, 230. Really physical kid, big time left-handed bat who I think has more juice than he showed. Where in the street was, he had a couple of really good batting practice rounds, was demonstrating some serious raw power. I can't really speak too much to it cause I never saw him in person, but, I think that given his departure time and what he did during the Cape season then, and then also at school, I think he's turned himself into a draft pick. Where he goes, I'm not sure, probably somewhere on day 3, but, I think that he's no doubt a draft pick. And then you touched on him a little bit, and Seaver King is a personal cheese ball of mine for the 2024 draft. He's a guy that I fell in love with when I found out about him in around April or May at Wingate, and he lit the world on fire at Wingate. It's an awesome story because he's a D2 guy who earned a spot on the Cape, and not only did he earn a spot on the Cape, he tore it up, and he had that notable 9-for-10 stretch on June 19th and June 20th, and before leaving for the collegiate national team, which, as you said, he would eventually make, which is awesome. And now he's, before coming to the Cape, he was transferring to Wake Forest. So for the Deeks, that is a big time get. I think that he's going to really perform at the highest level for Coach Walter. He's got a super explosive swing, outstanding athlete. The run times have been, I think, home to first. They've been 70 grade type run times. Again, super explosive swing. You talk about kind of drafting the athletes. He's not only a superb athlete, but he's got a performance. He's got a really good track record to his name too. And I think that if he does what I think he's going to do at Wake Forest next year, there's first round upside with Seaver King, especially if he can shore up the defense a little bit and become a decent defender on the dirt, whether that's at second base or shortstop. We'll see where Wake uses him, maybe even in the outfield, but there's first round upside with King.
Yeah, I love him. So I'll fight you for personal cheese ball status. we'll have to be a throuple of cheese ball loving for Seaver King. Last guy I wanted to mention here, actually two, couple of power bats, Hunter Hines, who I know we've talked about before. He's just absolutely putting on a show, and you couldn't be in a better park with big power than Red Wilson and YD. But that being said, I don't think there's a park, even Orleans, the center field, that could keep Hunter Hines in check. This guy has big power, and he's been showing it off consistently. Other guy that I saw last week that I'm kind of interested, wonder if he's drafted out of JUCO and never makes it to campus at Oklahoma State, but that's Xavier Cassarella. Cassarella was a 20th round pick back in 2021 of the Cardinals out of high school in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. And this guy that went to Wichita State, didn't work out. I think he was actually committed last year to Katuit. Ends up, matriculating to the JUCO side of things, doesn't end up committing or transferring, whatever you want to say, to Oklahoma State until I think it was October, late October of last fall. So he would be eligible for 2024. He is draft eligible because he is JUCO. I really like the swing. He enjoyed a big week last week. Didn't see a ton of at bats, but just the power upon contact is very easy to spot. It's a good swing. I saw him, you know, almost leave Brewster opposite field, and he kind of mishit it with Wood and still put it off the wall. And for a second, I thought it left. You know, if you've been behind the plate at Brewster, for whatever reason, the sight lines there down right field are kind of difficult to see if the ball actually like travels over the fence or under it. So it ended up being a ground rule double, but it was a miss hit that was well hit. And like, when I see that, it's like, all right, like this guy has some serious, you know, juice, in that bat, and just, you know, kind of adjustable hands, kind of an interesting player. I like Cassarilla a lot. So wasn't sure as we wrap this sucker up, if you had any thoughts on Hines. I know we've talked about him a bit. You mentioned him earlier in the podcast. Or Cassarilla, if he could be a guy that maybe doesn't make it to campus at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, not to pat ourselves on the back twice here, but I know Hines was a guy that we were talking about in the lead up to the season with, you know, the fact that he's playing at YD. He's got a chance to put up some gaudy numbers, and to this point, he's more than done so. He leads the league in home runs with 6, which in a whole summer, 6 home runs for the Cape League is a really respectable, really good.
Yeah.
A really good mark, but the fact he's done it before the end of June is unbelievable. And he's leading the league with 23 RBIs. I think the next closest guy is at 14. And like we've harped upon, the profile, it plays outstanding at Red Wilson Field. And we've touched upon it so many times, there's no reason to go back to it. But like you said, no ballpark at this point is containing Hunter Hines. So he could be playing at Red Wilson Field, he could be playing at, you know, the biggest graveyard in the league, and the numbers I think would look pretty similar. So I'm really excited to see what it's going to look like at the end of the summer. And especially because he's a non-USA guy, he projects to be here, Lord willing, for the whole summer, assuming he stays healthy. And we could be looking at some monster numbers and MVP type numbers with Hines. So he's been a name since he stepped foot onto onto Mississippi State's campus. So seeing him perform at this clip is both fun to watch firsthand, and then also for a Bulldogs team looking to bounce back next season, it is a very welcome sign, and he's coming off a monster sophomore campaign. So yeah, seeing him only build upon that has got to be a great sight for Mississippi State fans. And then with Cassarilla, we had been texting about him, I think two falls ago, last fall maybe, or
yeah,
whenever he was a true freshman at Wichita State, being like, who is this kid? Cause he was the best hitter on Wichita State as a true freshman, with unbelievable exit velocities, power to all fields, pulverizing the baseball out of the yard, again, to all fields, in a swing that at that point was really reminiscent to now big leaguer with the Pirates, Nick Gonzalez, with that explosive hand speed, the barrel really getting moving through the strike zone. Again, it didn't quite work out at Wichita, went the JUCO route, which is such a valuable route for really anyone out there, and blossomed at Seminole State, which is a powerhouse out in Oklahoma, and has since committed to Oklahoma State. Is playing for Chatham this summer, surprisingly. But he's done well for the Anglers. And I think that while there is draft interest with him, I think that he does make it to Stillwater, and you can kind of add him to that laundry list of impact bats that they're going to have next year. And he's gotten more physical since his freshman year, unsurprisingly. He was more of a wiry athlete, I think, as a puppy at Wichita State. Now he's a big kid. It's the same barrel speed. It really accelerates to the strike zone. I think I was watching your video, and I was pretty impressed with the bat speed and the action on his barrel. And he can still drive the baseball to all fields. Positionally, where he fits in, that's a little bit more of a TBD. Is it the outfield? Is it a corner infield spot? I think that's what Coach Holiday is going to send him back to Stillwater with, as a position. But I think that he's someone that's going to really be able to hit this summer, and he's done it so far. And if he's able to do so, I know that would really help out the Anglers, and then also help his prospect status out, as he looks towards 2024 potentially for the Cowboys. So really impressive hitter, and I think a sneaky one at that, just given the where the Angels are in the standings right now. And then also some of the bigger names they have on their roster with Carson Benj, Nolan Schubart. They just brought in Carter Trice before the draft, Chris Maldonado. I think that Cassarilla is a guy that has flown under the radar and people are going to be really excited about coming out of the summer. And then even leading into the draft as a potential, day three selection.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely an interesting pair of players there. Last question I'm going to ask and throw out there. Do you know offhand what's the home run record in a single season for the Cape Cod League? And the same thing with RBIs. I tried to look it up while we were chatting to see, you know, what Hines would have to do to set that record. But I couldn't find it. I clicked at it on the Cape Cod League website for their all-time records, and I got a 404. So
oh, no. I don't know if it's available or not. It's so funny because as I was talking about Hines and as I was looking into, doing research for the podcast, I was like, man, like I also got 404 because whatever the records are, like there could be something outrageous in like 1940 where someone hit like 15 or 16 home runs, which as good as Hunter is, I don't think that might be in the cards. But at this point, I mean, he's got to be on pace for at least one of them, if not both. 23 RBIs in 13, 14 games is unbelievable here.
I'll take the most in the last like 40 years. If we can do since 1983.
I like it. I was going to say, yeah, with the way that he's playing, whether it's an all-time record or not, I have a feeling that we're going to be talking about Hines in both home runs and RBIs the most in, you know, however many amount of years. It's going to be a lot of years, I think. So, I feel pretty confident in that we'll be sitting here in August talking about him breaking a couple of records.
Yeah, pretty standout power there for Hines. Well, for Peter, I'm Jeff. This was the Cape Cod Pod. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week, guys.